Untold, the podcast that goes behind the scenes interviewing founders and business leaders about their untold journeys. We go further than botched up deliveries. It's tough out there, and we want to tell the hardships that go with it and the effects this can have on guests' mental health. Key insights and tangible takeaways to help you, our listeners, continue on your journey. I'm Harry Turpin, founder of The Savourist, and I'm also your host. Let's do it. As always, keep jiggling. Welcome to Untold, the podcast where we go behind the scenes to speak to founders and business leaders about their untold stories. We go further than botched up deliveries. We speak about the really tough times and the times that bring lessons. And our aim for our listeners is to bring as many tangible takeaways as we possibly can to help you in your journey. Today, I'm super excited to be speaking to a good friend of mine, Minesh Mistry, who founded Holy Moly. Minesh, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm glad to be here.
Good stuff.
I've been listening to a lot of your podcasts.
That's what we like to hear.
Yeah.
Amazing, man. Well, look, welcome. It's an honour to have you on, and I'm really looking forward to speaking through the journey. I know there's going to be so many impactful lessons for our listeners throughout this, and I know it's an amazing journey that you've had, and one that I know is still quite fresh and raw. So we will speak about it in the most open way possible for our listeners, but also want to make sure that you feel as comfortable as you possibly can. So let's take it back, give the listeners some colour. Talk to me about how Holy Moly came about.
Yeah, so in my prior life to start up, I was in finance, so you know, qualified accountant and working in kind of a corporate environment for a good, I would say 10, 11 years, I think. And the idea of Holy Moly, so Holy Moly is a healthy vegan cookie, gluten-free, low in sugar, and the idea came from in the offices that I worked in, and I'm sure many people could relate to this. In the afternoon, people would like wheel in like donuts, cakes, and anything like that, because you need that little sugar rush in the afternoon and you know, post lunch kind of thing.
Amazing.
And it was on a daily basis, and I've always kind of had a bit of a kind of health and fitness streak to me, and I've always kind of watched what I've eaten and looked at my nutritionals, and I'd always been a bit kind of, I was like, really like the smell of that cake over there, right? But I know that I've just been to the gym and this isn't great for me, and like, I really wanted that kind of treat, and between me and my wife, you know, we had this kind of idea of like, well, what if we, well, initially it wasn't an idea, initially it was like, well, we still want that, and we just started making some like kind of honey nut bars at home, which we kind of had as a replacement of those cakes, and then we were like, hang on a minute, there's something in this. Like, we're not the only ones that are in this. And we, you know, went out and looked into the market, and this was 2016 time. So kind of as kind of Deliciously Ella was starting to come a bit bigger. And so it's quite still early stage. In the last 5 years, this kind of area's like boomed
that's
massively.
Exploded, hasn't it? Yeah.
So there wasn't really much in that way of being genuinely healthy and genuinely like a little bit indulgent as well. So we had this idea, and then from there we tested it. We went into, you know, we took it into our offices, and we, you know, we tested it with our colleagues and friends, and then we tried, we thought, okay, we're getting a good amount of interest here, and people are loving it. And then the next bit was the acid test, so would people actually pay money for it?
Yeah.
And so we did some like farmers markets in London, and we got a really good response on it. And then we were like, okay, let's go for this. And that was a point where, you know, I kind of stepped away from my career, as it were, and went on this kind of full time and turned it into Holy Moly, the brand. And that was 2017 when I left my job, and it took a year to then, you know, get manufacturing, get the recipe nailed down, you know, the branding and et cetera. And then And then yeah, like it was a great start to life. We launched in Selfridges, Whole Foods, As Nature Intended, which is now part of Planet Organic.
Yeah, yeah.
We had Dalesford. It was the first Amazing. 18 months were brilliant. We had all those kind of beacon accounts and it was a really good kind of start to life. Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing, man. And I think it's like going back. I've never worked in a corporate environment, so that sort of trolley that's coming along, I mean, it must just be so blindingly obvious that there's something better than jam donuts every day, right?
Yeah.
And like, I enjoy my food. I think I wouldn't come back down from those sort of trolleys. It would be terrible me being in that sort of environment. I absolutely love the product, man. I thought it was brilliant. I know there were like a huge amount of multiple things. We were talking just before we hit record about multiple things that sort of led to what's happened. But
yeah.
keeping in those kind of early days, getting those initial listings, getting that, talk me through the process of sort of, for listeners who are in their early days right now, what the process of taking that product to market was like. Like how did you go about, when you sort of spoke about the branding, are you coming up with the branding world yourselves? Did you speak to an agency? What does that sort of process look like in terms of manufacturing? I know we'll come on to manufacturing in a little bit more detail, but getting that first manufacturer, how did that sort of come about for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, so on the branding side, we went out and spoke to a number of different branding agencies. In fact, there was a couple of steps. So, you know, the first and cheapest way, we went to Fiverr and just got like a logo, and that was what we used just to kind of mess around and, you know, trial the product. The next stage is we got like a freelancer to come in, like, you know, design a bit of a better logo and a bit more like depth to the brand. That lasted throughout the kind of farmer's market, and then we were quite quickly like, well, we need something proper to kind of get this to where we want to go to.
Yeah.
So, you know, within a year or 18 months, we kind of had three different editions of it. And then we went out and spoke to a number of kind of branding agencies, and kind of, because we had been through that initial process of A, Fiverr, and B, a freelancer, we kind of knew what we did and didn't want. So we kind of flipped it on its head and we pitched to agencies.
Great.
And we went there and kind of said, look, this is what we're trying to do. And it was, you know, we really went into kind of, this is the market, the growth, the economics and the trends, etc. And this is what we're trying to fit into this kind of space over here. And this is what the competition is. And this is the feel and the, all that kind of stuff that normally they would pitch to you later on. But the reason we did that was because we knew kind of what we did and didn't want. And we wanted to know that if the branding agency kind of got what we were trying to achieve and whether they were like excited and bought into it. So really we went for the guys who were really excited about what we were doing and really kind of got it. And in fact it worked, because we I don't know what other people think, but we completely fell in love with the brand that they made and stuff. So that was that journey, which was
amazing. I think there's so much in there already, because the reason why I sort of wanted to unpack that question is because going down the route that you went down in terms of farmers markets, in terms of going to Fiverr, is like really gives you exactly what you just said, that kind of insight into what it is that you want. And I think there's a lot of brands that have fallen foul of early doors going, including ourselves with our first range of bars, where they raise money and go straight into a branding agency without really understanding what it is that they want as an outcome of that. And actually going through that process was for you super helpful. And then, so I want to sort of bring us up to today, talk us through sort of since pandemic. I mean, I know there's loads of layers in this, and we'll go into each and individual one, because it's sort of been a 5 or 6, 7 or 8 different things that have come at the same time that have brought up to today. But I'll just give our listeners like a little bit of colour behind what's happened recently.
Yeah. So I guess what we missed on the intro side of things is that we've closed Holy Moly. We announced like last week that we're officially closing the doors. And yeah, like you said, that there is it's multi-layered. There wasn't one specific thing.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, for many people, it was that the pandemic kind of started many problems. And you know, when that happened, we were, I guess, just a little bit over 18 months. And as I was saying, we had, you know, we had all this like really exciting. We were kind of on an upward trajectory. And before the 2 or 3 months before the pandemic, we'd gone into Waitrose HQs to have to pitch to them, and it all sounded very positive, and we were super excited about that. We were in the process of raising investment. We were speaking to Co-op. We'd got a really good food service listing, and we were with like NatWest Accelerator, and it all felt great. You know, things were great in a really good direction, and we'd just we'd moved manufacturers, which at the time we thought was great because our cogs had gone down and you know, they could do things at a faster rate and stuff, but we can talk about that later, but that nearly killed us as well. And if you don't mind me kind of saying, you know the same story because you went to the same manufacturer and had the exact same problems.
Oh, mate, and I remember speaking to you about it at the time, and I mean it's horrific.
But that, I mean, that's a separate subject. But as so then the pandemic hit, and then all of a sudden, as with everybody else in retail, you know, the world had completely changed, and all that kind of exciting stuff had gone, and people stopped buying, and you know, for a year and a half, a lot of what we were used to had gone, and even to some extent now it's still not quite the same. So excuse me. So then that happened, and we kept on kind of plowing through. We were like, yeah, we're gonna get through the pandemic, and as if we can get through this, we'll be fine. And in some ways we did. We got through that. We raised investment. We went online and Amazon as everybody else did.
Yeah.
We even did a rebrand, not a big rebrand, but you know, a little bit of a refresh. And stuff. And then 2021 was, so a year ago, was an absolute stonking year for us in many ways, because we've got our first like national listing, so Sainsbury's, it was a trial. We got Ocado, we started getting some big like export. We had another kind of smallish investment round, but it was like a bridge round to fund those listings, and then the plan was to kind of go back and complete that round once we got through all of that. And then 2021 came, and literally like it felt like the 1st of January, and the world had completely changed, and everything had changed for us, like in terms of you know, price rises as everybody's been having. We had a lot of problems with like labor shortages with our factory. We had you know, obviously the fuel charges were, and logistic costs had gone up. And then obviously on a consumer side of things, a lot of things had changed in terms of, for a consumer, cost of living crisis was a big deal.
Yeah.
So therefore they're looking at their spend, and premium products like Holy Moly goes to the bottom of the list.
Yeah.
And so therefore consumers aren't looking at that, but then therefore retail buyers are no longer looking at premium products. They're looking at how they can help their customers with more, you know, economical products. And then the other part is HFSS kind of came in, and therefore buyers looking at completely different stuff. And whilst ours is healthy, because it's a baked product, we have to substitute low sugar for something, and that fat. Therefore we don't fit into HFSS. And there's that side of it. So it's,
I mean, HFSS, we could talk about stuff for hours. I mean, like, I think it's a pretty blanket way of dealing with fat, salt, sugar, right? It's not like, just because products don't sit as HFSS compliant doesn't necessarily mean they're healthy or not, right? So that's another thing that just is.
Is
someone throwing something at you again in a way that is just sort of slightly unfair?
Yeah, I mean, look, ultimately, I think the premise and the reason behind it is a great thing. I think, you know, it's a really good idea, and the outcome, etc., is great. But as you say, a blanket kind of scoring card is and for all products it almost should be different for different categories. Oh my God, yeah, you know,
of course.
Because like sweet type products, there's different, you know, people still want sweet products, but then surely there should be like something which is a better for you sweet product, or you know, that kind of thing.
And let's hope that that comes from this, and that this is the kind of like first step in it. I remember when they bought in the sugar tax on soft drinks, and you're like, like if you don't know that like the soft drinks are bad for you, like wake up. It's a pretty low hanging fruit to go after, right? Okay, so look, like, and I want to try and sort of come to you. We've covered sort of how the different areas that come to that, and I want to come back onto manufacturing because I think there's a really helpful, tangible point there. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I mean, like, look, it's now we're in December now, and this is kind of the trigger point for us to start thinking about closing was September 2021, when we had all these like great launches and investment and all this PR. We even had a TV advert, national TV advert.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was, you know, at the time it felt great, but then we had a trademark issue with another brand of very similar name, Holy Moly Dips.
Yeah.
And that kind of came knocking on our door immediately when all of that had happened.
Yeah.
And I think we approached that wrong because we just thought the world was going to end, and we kind of fully focused on that. And that kind of triggered a lot of other things that we started looking at the business differently and thinking doom and gloom. To answer your question, it isn't a case of we just woke up one day and said, we're going to close the business. Yeah. And like, it's kind of been coming on for, I guess, near 18 months now. And and the decision, that initial time when we were like, what's going on here? And then when we kind of like, we think we might have to close this. That period was very difficult.
Yeah.
Very, very difficult. And and even at that time, I think it was about February, March when we started getting very kind of serious about, I think we're going to close it. And at the time I got COVID.
Yeah.
And I was like in bed for like 3 days, and it was like February, March time when it's like dark most of the time. And when you're ill and you're that ill, like everything just feels like doom and gloom. Yeah. And I went into a bit of a period of about 3 or 4 weeks where I'm really positive. I'm really like optimistic. I don't think I've ever had been a prolonged period of being in the dumps kind of thing. Like, but I had about 3 or 4 weeks where, I was literally kind of just trying to get through my day and not really doing much. And I look back on that afterwards a few months later and I was like, I think that was something.
Yeah.
And listening to I've listened to your podcast about other people and I was like, that sounds very similar.
Yeah.
I definitely think there was a little bit of a processing period of that. And that was difficult. But now having gone through that process and a bit of a prolonged period of finally coming around to it and announcing it.
Yeah.
I actually feel weirdly very relieved to have.
I was going to say.
Yeah. Like when I did the LinkedIn post about it, I felt really good about it. Like it felt really good to kind of close the door and like, you know, and also like I've had a lot of messages of, you know, obviously online, but people message me on the side and, you know, not just saying, you know, you'll be all right, but like, you know, talking about what we've built and things like that. And I was like, actually, do you know what? That feels good.
Looking back
and saying, actually, we did create something pretty cool here. Like, you know.
Oh, mate, I mean, it's unbelievable. And I think it's one of those things that people don't speak about because it's so easy for people that haven't been through something to go like, that didn't work. And then you look back and you're like, you literally took an idea from a food trolley when you're working corporate life to being stocked in like major places around the UK. It's fucking wicked. Yeah. And it like, irrespective of that big fucking exit that everyone's always chasing, like what Hugh Thomas talks about this far more eloquently than I can ever speak about it. But and he we interviewed him at Bread and Jam over summer, and he was saying what quantifies success? And it's like it's everybody's version of success is individual. Mm-hmm. And it's such a fascinating thing, because it's like everyone's constantly chasing, ultimately as a business, I guess, an exit, right? But fundamentally, if you take a step back and you go, even if you don't achieve an exit, it doesn't necessarily mean that it hasn't been successful. Like, you've gone from, as we said, going an idea of your own through the branding process to finding a manufacturer to getting it out into Sainsbury's with a national television ad. I think it should be celebrated in every single way that it is. So those.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's so easy in startup, and especially in kind of where we are, because it's very kind of brand driven. And, you know, you're on your Instagrams and your TikToks and your LinkedIn, and you can see what everybody else is doing, and you want, and then you compare yourself to others, and you're like, oh, why am I not there? Or like, so even when you have those successes, and me and Parul, my wife / co-founder, now that we've closed the business and have been closing the business, we talk about it a lot. We're like, we'd never celebrated any of that.
Yeah.
Like when we got into Selfridges, we never like said, oh, we never had like a moment of like, let's celebrate this. Or when we got into Sainsbury's or any of that, we were just like, okay, right, next thing. Like, you know, because you're constantly like, okay, we need to move on to the next thing, and you see what others are doing, like, we need to get there. But every business is different. Every founder is different. Every, you know, they're like, your investment is different. Your cogs are different. Your product market fit is different. And so therefore, it's good to look around and take inspiration, but the comparing side is, it can get you in a bit of trouble, you know?
Oh, mate, 100%. And it's like, it's amazing how, exactly as you're saying, like, everything looks very rose-tinted on Instagram, on TikTok, on LinkedIn. I mean, part of the reason why we set up this podcast was exactly that reason, because you're like, why is nobody talking about this reality? It's like, it's new listings this, it's new products that, it's way, it's great, but no one's going, yes, okay, we've got to that point, or yes, we've got that listing, or yes, we've got that new product, but no one's going like, well, the last 2 years were fucking shit, and like actually speaking about it. And I think that if you look back to when you were to start the business, when you're sat in that corporate office, and someone said to you, right, in like a year's time you're going to be in Sainsbury's and have a national TV ad, you'd be like, what the fuck? But because when you get into it, you then chase it, right? I want to come back to something that you mentioned just before we went on to talking about you, and I want to sort of loop it back around, but I'm just conscious because I don't want to not speak about it. This, the trademark that you were speaking about. Talk me through a little bit more about that. What happened?
So we're Holy Moly Cookies, and there's Holy Moly Dips. They do like guacamole and stuff. And we kind of started out at a very similar time. They were a little bit ahead of us, and we bumped into them at a trade show, and we kind of had a bit of a loose chat about kind of trademark, and we just kind of agreed amongst ourselves, like a bit of an informal agreement that, you know, we, as long as we keep in our kind of lanes, and then we're happy to kind of coexist. And so, you know, we kind of cracked on, and they grew phenomenally. They've got a great business, and we kind of grew a lot much slower, but we kind of, you know, we kind of kept on growing and stuff. And that was based on that kind of agreement. And then last year, they kind of came back and said, like, look, this isn't working for us, and we kind of need you to you know, rebrand, as it were. And you know, which was a bit of a shock, because we had that kind of informal coexistence agreement.
Yeah.
You know, we were kind of discussing amongst ourselves, and then, you know, I don't want to go into too much detail, but eventually, of course, it kind of got to kind of lawyers and threat of court and stuff. And, you know, for us, it was very difficult, because, as I said, we raised a small amount, and we were going to complete that round later on, but since that had happened, it was, I didn't want to go and raise money and kind of, it's not ethical to do that. And, you know, you're going to have to disclose that to investors.
Yeah, of course.
You don't, in fact, you probably don't have to, but I wouldn't not do that.
Yeah.
And you're probably not going to get investment. So we started kind of pulling back on, business development and things like that, and kind of kept our money aside for any kind of legal stuff. And
yeah.
It just wrangled on for so long that eventually we ran out of money.
And do you think that was the kind of proper moment where you realised, actually, okay, this is the start of closing up?
That was a trigger. I'm not gonna say like that's the reason why we closed, and like blame that for,
of course,
for the other things, because there was like, I also, you know, being completely honest about it, I don't think we ever got product market fit.
Yeah,
our product was, we never quite got it right, if I'm being completely honest. I know a lot of people say, I love your product and stuff, but I know there's so many times that it was just not right.
Yeah.
And that was a number of reasons. Manufacturing was a big, big, big problem for us. We had three different manufacturers and it changed every time. As we spoke about earlier, that the second manufacturer completely killed the product. And the third manufacturer had, you know, it changed again. And then, when we launched in Sainsbury's, they messed up the recipe, and it was nowhere near, it was like about 20% as good as what it should have been.
So there
were other problems, and raising investment, and then, you know, the product market fit, the product was a problem.
Yeah.
There was quite a few things. So yeah, I wouldn't say that was a trigger to start thinking about these other things.
And just on the, while we're on this manufacturing side of things, learnings from working with a manufacturer, what would you say to someone now that's struggling with a manufacturer along those lines, or going out to look for a manufacturer?
Well, look, I would say your manufacturer and your manufacturing relationship is probably the most important part of your business as a food product, right?
Yeah.
Because you have to get the product right. Branding, marketing always has to be great. That's important. And that'll help your product sell, but your product will help it resell, right?
Yeah.
Like, people come back because they like the product, right? And you've got to be on top of it. And I think I'm guilty of perhaps sweeping stuff under the carpet. Like, when I knew there was a problem sometimes, I was like, I've got spinning so many plates.
Yeah.
I'm so stressed about X, Y, Z. Hopefully this was a one-off and
it'll
just kind of fix itself. And I don't want to have that difficult conversation or anything.
Yeah.
But if anything, you got to be all over it and like be like in the detail, turning up for like production runs, not every single one, but like at least the first one, two or three, and let them know that you're going to be on top of their case. And maybe every kind of 10 production runs or something along that lines, and have a tight spec.
Yeah.
And, you know, hold them to accountability to it.
Yeah.
The flip side is you've got to be careful that we're small brands, and a lot of these kind of manufacturers have bigger brands and they're managing quite a few things. And if you come across too demanding, then it'd be like, well,
it's like, I feel exactly the same in terms of like leaving stuff under the carpet in the early days with our bars, and it's really tricky because if you don't, you're not going to be able to get to speak to a manufacturer that is a big manufacturer that's going to have less issues as a startup. But then at the same time, you need these slightly smaller manufacturers in order to get off the ground, right? So it's that like huge sort of catch 22.
Yeah.
And so relationship wise with that manufacturer, obviously getting up there, seeing it, and when you realize that they were producing product that just wasn't right, how did you go about what are the conversations that happened after that?
So the first time it happened, this is quite a bad story actually. The first time it happened, I kind of thought, I saw some of the products and they were almost soggy, they were really kind of moist, and I was like, that's not right, and it doesn't smell right, it's really not right. But we were kind of launching in different places, and I just didn't have and he was also very difficult, if you remember.
Yeah.
Feedback and stuff, and I just couldn't, go through that conversation with him because I just had so many other things going on, and I thought, do you know what? It's the first run. Maybe it's just they've got teething problems, and I won't bother. Like whatever. And at that point, we used to have like windows in the front of our packages, so you could actually see the product. And we went to one of our retail, so Source Market. Do you remember them?
Yeah,
they're not around anymore. But we went to them in King's Cross, and we saw at the front with the windows, and you could see the mold. There was mold because it was moist is, you know. The more moist it is, the more likely it is to get mold, and you could. It was actually white. It was disgusting.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh my God. And like I opened it and I had like an intern, Lily, working for us at the time. And she was like, there's loads of them like this. And we opened it and it was all white and it was horrendous. And we just went straight to the manager and we were like, look, we've noticed some problems here. We're going to have to take these products out. And they were brilliant about it. They were like, oh, thank you for noticing that. And I was like, look, I'll speak to the buyer and we'll let them know and kind of stuff. And then that was when I was like, went back to him and said, look, this is what's happened. Showed them like video evidence, all this kind of stuff, and sent them products and stuff. And they were like, okay. And they were actually really good about it at that time. They like refunded us and, you know, we went back to the drawing board with it. And then there was it happened again, but not mold. They put in the wrong ingredients.
Yeah.
And they were just not, they knew that they were in the wrong and they just wouldn't, accept it.
I mean, it's
yeah,
mate. We've had a similar actually with the same manufacturer, a similar experience.
Yeah,
with mold on bar products, and I think one of the things that really sticks out to me, that correct me if I'm wrong, but I've been through it, so feel the same way. When you notice an issue, or you kind of your gut's telling you there's an issue. You tend to ignore it at that stage, certainly in the early stage, because you want so badly for it to be okay that you kind of go, nah, I'm sure it will be. And it's not until you then realise the issue where you're like, well, fuck, now we've got to face up to this.
Yeah.
And there's that little bit of like, surely it's not going to be that. Surely not. And then when it is that, you're like, fuck, if I'd have actually listened to myself early doors, maybe it wouldn't have got so bad as that.
Do you know, it's funny you say that about your gut, because I, for the first 2 or 3 years, right, I used to have this, it's really sad, but it's quite cool as well. I think you quite like it with nerdy entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
But I used to have this like big, like A1 poster, right? And I used to have a line down the middle, on the left was wins, on the right was fails. And
yeah.
At the end of each week, I'd just write up.
Love it.
And it was like really, sometimes it would just be like a buyer responded and that was a win. And like, you know, fails were, whatever their fails were, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, we go through the list, you know, and I'd be, you know, updating it, you know, weekly if I remember to do it weekly. And then at the end of the year, for the first 2 or 3 years, like I'd go through it and I'd get really nerdy about it, putting like an Excel spreadsheet, and then I'd like group them into kind of the learnings, like each one, like what was the learning from it? And then I found there was like a bit of a rhythm going on. Like there was something going on there, and like one of them, like there was like 3 or 4 different themes of like the same things keep coming up of the theme, not necessarily like the end result, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And like one of them, which always came up, was you should have gone with your gut. You see something and you're like, oh, my gut feeling was this, but actually I went with what I thought, like what I was either advised or what I've seen other people do or whatever, right? And you know, there's a whole bunch of evidence and science coming out now about your gut and how it's your second brain, and you know that feeling you have in your gut is it happens for a reason.
Yeah.
Because you're having all these your second brain is having feelings and so forth. So there is something about going with your gut.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And I think it's one of the hardest things to kind of explain without having going through it. Yeah. I remember countless people saying to me, "Oh, just go with gut, just trust your gut, trust your gut."
Yeah.
And at the time when you haven't had that real like, and it's normally, to really understand it, I think it's kind of hindsight.
Yeah.
where you go like, oh, well, something was telling me not to do that, but I did it, and then it went wrong. And you're sort of like, I remember countless people saying to me, trust your gut, trust your gut. And at the time, it's a little bit like someone going, just do it.
Yeah.
You're like, well, what the fuck does this mean? Yeah, like, there's nothing. And then when you go through it and you really do understand it, where like you can genuinely feel it, it's like, yeah. I think it, I mean, the gut is.
Like for me, every time I didn't go in my gut, I was wrong. Like,
yeah.
You know, definitely. I mean, I trust your gut for sure.
Yeah. No, love it. Hope you're enjoying the episode so far. Untold Podcast is brought to you by The Savourists. We're here to keep you jiggling at snack time. We have a range of mega flavour, loaded ingredient, real nutritious snacks. They taste absolutely banging. And we have a brand new range of crunchets, which are made from black beans, edamame beans, puffed rice, seasoned with a Thai chili and a sizzling barbecue. Yes, I promise you, they are as delicious as they sound. Thanks so much for your time. Enjoy the rest of the episode and check us out, savourists.com. Ta-da! So, covered off manufacturers and what, how to get burnt by them. I mean, we've been burnt by them as well. I think that's a, I want to sort of just get to a point where, if you're comfortable speaking about it, what happens now from a practical perspective from the business. Like, I think there's a lot of people out there that won't know. Like, when you close a business, what steps do you go through to do that? From practically admin wise, rather than.
Yeah, it's so I'm learning that. So I haven't officially closed the business.
Yeah.
I might have announced it, but like we're now going through the process of how we go about doing it. So there's I think there's three different ways. So there's something called strike off or a wind down.
Yeah.
It's essentially just, you know, slowly closing up operations and then you strike it off the company's house list.
Yeah.
And you know, you pay off your creditors, etc. So you kind of, you know, legit in that sense.
Yeah.
The two other ways is insolvency, right? So there's two types of insolvency. There's a voluntary insolvency, so where you say, look, this is not working out, we need to go insolvent.
Yeah.
And then you'd get a company to come in, kind of, you know, take over, and they would kind of manage that process. The third is an involuntary insolvency, so when you're not paying creditors and somebody comes back and says, you owe me money and you've owed me money for however long, so I'm gonna instruct you know, somebody to come in, you know, sorry, I don't know whether you go to court or you just instruct somebody, but essentially that's an involuntary because it's forced upon you. Those are the three different ways. The first one is I guess the simplest way and the cheapest way, because you just kind of wind it down, you get your account to do it. The other two ways, you have to get a company to come and do that.
Yeah.
And that will cost in the thousands of pounds. So that's obviously not ideal. And the complication is, if you've got a bounce back loan, then you, even if you don't really have much creditors, debtors, etc., you can't go down the wind down route.
Okay.
Because you've borrowed the money from a bank, and the bank has got it guaranteed by the government.
Yeah.
But the only way they'll get that back from the government is if you're an insolvent right, okay. business. So okay. then you kind of have to go through the insolvency process.
Yeah, okay, I see what I mean.
So, yeah.
Okay. I know there was another layer to this from a personal perspective that also sits on top of this. Talk me through that.
Yeah, so I think on a personal note, I think a lot of founders and kind of don't fully appreciate the personal side of starting a business and don't acknowledge it as well. But it's a huge toll on your personal life starting a business, because you're all in.
Yeah.
You know, you're all in all the time. Like, you know, my wife's always complaining, I'm always kind of just checking my phone and stuff. And, you know, or you're always switched on, you're going on holiday, you're always switched on. You don't have that kind of break away from it.
Yeah.
Financially, you're all in.
Yeah.
You know, it's all that kind of side of things.
And from an identity as well, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it did take me a little bit of time to kind of unwind myself from the brand.
Yeah.
For sure. So look, there's a number of things which on my side of things. So like, we had our second child last year. And then we moved homes at the end of last year. So, you know, people talk about the three most stressful things in life is having a baby, moving homes, and changing your career. So I didn't change my career, but I've got a business. So like that, all of those kind of three things were there in the last kind of year. And it was just, I was like, fuck.
It's
true what people say. I've got all three of them, and it was fucking intense, man. And that kind of, and especially I think having a child and having a second one, that the amount of time pressure at home versus what it used to be is very difficult. I just couldn't put the time in the business, and you know, and I, it's not that I didn't want it, but I also wanted to be at home.
Of course.
I wanted to kind of be there. So there was that side of it. And
I guess your mindset to everything just completely changes, right?
It does. Yes, it does. It does to an extent. But truthfully, it's just a time pressure. You can't, you know, you're not in your 20s and you're not like kind of young, free and single, and you can work all hours if you wanted to, or whatever, or go to all the social events and networking. Like, you know, we're quite, you know, good mates, and we're always trying to meet up. I'll try to come to your kind of evening events or networks. And I'm always like, oh, sorry, mate. I've got the kids tonight. Yeah. Like, I'm doing whatever, and I just can't do it anymore. So you just can't put that time and effort in like you used to, and so all of that did certainly played a big part in it. And then the other kind of elephant in the room, which we kind of have discussed off air, is like personal health. So as I kind of mentioned earlier, I've always kind of been into health and fitness, so I've kind of always looked after myself. But a couple of weeks before the first lockdown, so, you know, February, March 2020, I got a bit of shitty news that I was diagnosed with something called multiple sclerosis, which is an autoimmune disease. And it's a chronic illness, so you have it for life. And if it progresses, you know, it affects your nervous system. So, you know, if it does progress, it, you know, it affects all parts of your body and your life and things like that. And so that happened then, and processing that, as well as a lockdown and a business that which could go under and a young family and things like that. So,
man, I can't imagine.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm speaking to you and the podcast about it now, but actually I've kept it amongst my wife and family just for the last two and a half years. I haven't really told anybody. Only kind of recently I spoke to you about it when we caught up recently, and I'm starting to tell people as I see them. But it was that took a big toll on personal life and business as well. And stress is a big part of MS in terms of it can really trigger things. And and at the time, you know, what we talked about being all in a business.
Yeah.
I was like, fuck this MS thing. I'll figure a way out of it. But I've got a business here, which I've spent 2 or 3 years, but it has to work.
Like,
MS I'll deal with when I get a chance to, kind of thing. And I was like, I'm going all in. And I remember my wife saying, I think you need to make some tough decisions here, because you've got, this is quite a big thing. And I was like, no, where the business is going. Like, and then over the last kind of year to 18 months, all those pressures that we talked about in terms of the economy, the climate, the pressures of the trademark issue and so forth, and all that stress and the funding, it all came to a head, and I was like, do you know what? This isn't worth it.
It really isn't worth it.
And realistically, this climate isn't going to ease off, and this is not to scare you or any other brands that are out there listening. It's just the God's honest truth. You got to find a way through it, and we couldn't see that happening for a number of reasons, but also on a personal side of things, it was like, if this is going to affect my health and well-being, it's just not worth it.
It's the, like, now, as you said, coming out the other side of it and having made that decision, feeling relieved, and I guess completely changing your mindset to it, where you speak about it like that and you're like, we'll deal with this at a later point when we can, and now it's like it's not worth it. And that is coming through that as a journey must have been the most stressful thing. I mean I can't imagine going through that whilst having family providing, etc., etc., and now coming out of the other side and going, actually, you know what, when you take a step back, it's just not fucking worth it. And that is, I mean, like, huge credit to have been on that journey, man, because it's, I've got huge amounts of respect for that, to sit back and go, there's more important things in life right now than building this business. And
yeah, it's easy to get caught up in having a business and thinking that this is the be all and end all, and not to say you shouldn't think like that, because that's almost our superpower, that we can, we truly believe in it and we will do anything for it, but there's a certain level of realism as well that you need to consider.
Yeah,
100%. And in the last kind of 6 months, you know, there's that thing of like being persistent and, you know, keep going kind of thing. And in the last kind of 6 to 9 months, when I have spoken to people about it, there's always that thing of, no, nah, keep going, you're doing a good job, and kind of, but they don't see what's going on in the background. And this podcast is great for that, because that's what you talk about. And one of my uncles, who's, you know, he's had his own business for quite a long time, and, you know, I catch up with him every now and then, and he, you know, he's a good person to speak to, because he's kind of got that experience. And I was chatting to him about it. He's like, no, keep going, you're doing a great job. And I was like, but how long do you keep going for? Like, at what point do you put a bit of realism in and say, actually, you know, how long do you keep kicking the can down the road, or like, until it's like, you know, at what point, you know? And he's like, oh, yeah, you make a good point, actually. Like, you need that little bit of, keep going, you know, have your drive and keep going, but also be realistic about where you are and what the future holds, and the economy, and your, you know, your business and your proposition, etc.
What green shoots are coming from it, right? I guess that
yeah,
I mean, it's, you put it so eloquently, but being in that position where you can put the realism to it and be like, actually, okay, there's, in order to water this more, we something massively needs to change here, and we need to get something back that's worth watering, and having that realism element to it is key, right? But
exactly. It's difficult, and it kind of goes back to what we were saying earlier about kind of sweeping it under the carpet.
Yeah,
a tough decision comes. I almost think what we should do is run to the tough decisions.
Yeah.
Right? Because it hurts, but they're a tough decision for a reason, because they're important.
Yeah.
Right? And that's certainly a big learning that I'm taking away from all this, because I look back and think about the tough decisions, and how some of them I approached well, some of them I didn't, and certainly there were things which I should have addressed earlier, and whilst it might have been difficult, you should definitely go out your way to kind of figure them out early.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, mate, 100%. And I think there's not a founder or anyone that's listening to this podcast in life in general that at some point in life has shied away from difficult discussions, difficult decisions, difficult. And actually going through that now, I bet you'll never, sort of moving forward, you'll take that, and that'll be a kind of mentor sort of motto to life moving forward, right?
Yeah.
In terms of just sort of rushing towards those difficult decisions. Dude, yeah, I just want to come to you yourself going through this and how you sort of coped with it going through the tough times. Like, talk to me about how, what helped you get through it? How did, were there any sort of tools and techniques and bits that helped you on a mental, physical side, taken away from actually whether the business is here or not, it going to you personally? You taught me through that journey and how that helped.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. So I think, like, reaching out and speaking to your network, and you know, just having a chat about kind of where the business is and what the issues are, and I think that helped quite a lot, because actually then you start figuring out, actually, I'm not the only one that's going through this or has been through this, and you can get some good advice from people who are a lot more knowledgeable and been around a lot longer.
And
it helps to know that you're not the only one, right?
Yeah.
Like, that certainly helps. I think the other kind of side of stuff is how you mentally get over this.
Yeah.
Right? And one thing that I started doing at the start of lockdown is like meditation.
Yeah.
And I started with like kind of the Headspace kind of stuff.
And I
did a bit of the Wim Hof stuff as well. Yeah. If you're aware of that, like the kind of the cold water stuff and the breathing and stuff like that. And that's immense. That's brilliant. And but the meditation, I think, really helped when you start getting into it, in terms of starting to kind of zone in on yourself, but also being able to kind of process things and categorize them in the right way, if you know what I mean. And then be like, okay, I understand what's happened there, and you know, this isn't me. And starting to understand kind of what's going on and what truly matters, if that makes sense. I'm a big advocate of the meditation side of stuff. And this is coming from somebody who was like, probably 3 years ago, was a bit like, what, you sit there and still and you don't think of anything. What is that? Big advocate for that. I think that's super helpful.
The actual meditation piece itself,
Talk
me through, what does that look like? Because I'm sure there's people listening who, I'm a massive advocate of it as well, by the way. But talk me through what it is, because I'm sure there'll be listeners out there that still think that are you 3 years ago with regards to meditation. So talk me through the more kind of like the actual moments of meditation. Like, what does the app tell you to do? How does it work? What do you go through in order to meditate?
So look, very briefly, the process is you start by doing like deep breaths, and then you kind of check in on yourself to you do like a body scan. And then you're almost like centering yourself, and then you start kind of focusing on your breathing, and you kind of go through that kind of breathing process. And if you want to, you can then have a topic that you think about or focus on. Eventually you kind of come out of the meditation. That's the process, and I probably haven't done that as eloquently as somebody who is, a meditation expert or a guru kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's the very high level. But ultimately what the benefits of it is that you're slowing your brainwaves down, right? Which reduces the stress and it helps you focus better.
Yeah.
And so you kind of come out of it with clarity. So I don't know when you do it, but I come out of it, I have clarity,
100%,
and I have focus, and I'm like, the next few hours or day or so, I'm very kind of clear on what I need to do, and very kind of focused and efficient in a way. And I'm calm as well.
Yeah.
I'm calm, and I don't let stress get to me, and it's a game changer.
I'm a huge advocate. I use Calm app.
Yeah.
And that has similar stuff, and I think it's the way that you explained it was perfect, because realistically our audience, the listeners here are not going to be meditation gurus, and it's actually finding ways to, because I think there's such a myth around, it's the same with, we've spoken to a few people on here about counselling and about opening up and speaking about it, but with meditation it's the same. Like, a lot of people will think that meditation is sat on a pillow on the floor with gongs and smelly things all around you. Like, that's not the case. It's just a question of going,
well, it can be.
But like the way to use it on that kind of day to day, but certainly the way that I use it, is that even just going for a walk with nothing, with no like, it's just being at one with yourself, right? Yeah. It's that whole process of, and checking in on yourself is exactly the way to explain.
And you talked about like therapy and counselling there. Like, as I said to you earlier, like I've always been kind of optimistic and kind of can do and action orientated. So I've never really been affected by this stuff. And when people talk about like mental health and they talk about like open up and talking, that's not really me. Like I've never really been one to go around kind of talking about it. Well, albeit yeah. I'm here talking to you about it, right? but it's just not like that's not really like kind of me. And I don't think that's one size fits all. So I don't think it's a case of everybody would benefit from talking.
Yeah.
You probably would, but if it's not your personality, then it's 100%. Not your personality. And for me, this was perfect because I prefer to, I say fix myself, but I prefer to kind of deal with things myself.
Yeah.
Right. And find an action or, you know, find a way out of it in my own way. And that, this was perfect.
Yeah.
And one thing that I forgot to mention, the other side of it is a mindset change. So I, do you know what? I never know if I'm pronouncing it right. Stoicism, is that right?
Yeah.
So like that whole, the whole theory and the whole concepts around that, I fucking love it. It's just everything about that is brilliant. And the key concepts of, you know, don't worry about things which are out of your control.
Yeah.
You know, only worry about things that are in your control is, you know, it's brilliant. And all the other kind of concepts around it, I think they're great, and everybody should kind of, especially entrepreneurs, should kind of look into it and try build that into their life somehow.
Yeah. I completely agree. And I think one of the key points that really resonates with me there is every single person on this planet is on their own journey.
Mm.
And there's no, certainly we the podcast focuses on the mental health side of things. There's absolutely no one shoe fits all, one glove fits all, whatever the phrase is.
Yeah.
It's always going to be individual. And in order for it to help, you've got to be in a position where you feel comfortable with doing it. And exactly as you're saying, like, if you're not the sort of person that wants to speak about it, it's going to take a hell of a lot to speak about it. And actually, it's not going to help because going through that process, it's finding what it is individually for each person and making sure that you go through it in a way that helps you, right?
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. But
the meditation thing I love because it really is that check-in. And I know when you're saying about the body scan, to give reference to that, like, I know when I've done body scans on it, and this might sound a little bit ridiculous, but when they go like, and now come down to your shoulders, and you're like, fucking hell, I've got loads of tension in my shoulders. But like, you would have never noticed doing it. Or they're like, relax your feet. You're like, fucking hell, I don't think I've ever relaxed my feet in my life. But when someone tells you to do it, you then it is amazing. So yeah, guys, do check it out. Mate, look, I'm really conscious of your time, so I want to sort of just start to wrap up the episode. But what lies ahead for you, man? What, like, there must be an element. I know you said, like, you're now at a point of feeling relieved with it. Are you now at a point where you're actually quite excited about what the future holds and kind of what is coming round the corner for you next?
Yes and no is the answer, I guess. I'm still a bit like anxious about the future because, you know, I'm like, what do I do now? Like, I think as a founder, you go away with, like, you know, you get so many great skills of, you know, how to start a business, how to create a product. You learn about marketing, branding, all areas of a business, operations, finance, sales, etc., which is great. It's almost like a real life MBA.
Yeah.
But unless you're going to be a founder again, then you start thinking, well, what value can I, like, say if I go to a medium-sized business, they want people to come in who are experts in their field, who can either grow their sales from 1 to 20 million or come in and work in their operations and, you know, be able to send pallets to USA or something like that, right?
And
I'm like, well, actually, I've done, you know, the classic kind of entrepreneur. I'm like, you know, jack of all trades, master of none kind of thing. So it's trying to figure out where my value is and where I kind of fit in.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's my finance background, which I can kind of go back to, but really, I think it'd be a waste of my 5 years of experience if I...
Yeah, 100%.
If I go back 100%. To doing something like
and
that.
And I think you're also doing yourself an injustice by saying that, because I think like, yes, it's kind of jack of all trades, master of none, but what you would bring to a business is, I mean, there's a hell of a lot more within that, and I think that the experience that you've been on alone is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, like I'm speaking to a few different businesses to kind of help them out in terms of, like, kind of coming and just kind of weirdly, like I said, I don't want to go back to finance, but kind of going and just kind of clean up their finances in terms of their margins and figure out what their margins are and their cash flow, and you just kind of tighten all that kind of stuff up. So that's quite interesting, working with a couple of small businesses doing that. The funding side of stuff really interests me. You know, whether it's kind of going to work for a VC or something along that line. I think that, because that'd be quite a cool way to work with a number or even hundreds of different startups and kind of keep my finger on the pulse, as it were.
And also be able to kind of see through the founders, right? I say see through the founders, but you've been there and you've done it. So
you can relate to it, right?
Relate to it, but you can also say, well, look, what they're saying is bring that realism to it, right? Because you can see what you've been there, so and done it. Amazing. Well, look, man, I can't thank you enough. I think it's inspirational and incredibly brave coming on and speaking so openly about it. I think you've had the most amazing journey, and I'm not just saying that because you're a mate of mine. I think it's I think it really is wonderful. And just for listeners, best way for them to get in contact with you? LinkedIn?
Yeah, LinkedIn's best, yeah. Get in touch on LinkedIn. Happy to chat to anybody who wants to chat. I'm here for that, and or if you want to tighten up your margins and stuff.
Love it,
man.
Love it. Well, thank you so much for coming on Told
Dude. Thanks, mate. It's been great.
I really appreciate it. And listeners, if you've enjoyed the episode, do download, share with your friends, your mum's friends, your friend's dog, your friend's dog's mother. And we are Untold Podcast. Thanks so much for your time. Cheers for listening. Ta-da. So much for giving us your time and listening. I really hope you've enjoyed. If you have enjoyed, please do download, subscribe, tell your friends' friends, tell your friend's mum's dog. It all really helps us grow the podcast, ultimately bring on more guests, which will be able to get us to give across more tangible takeaways. Thank you so much again. I'm Harry Turpin, your host, founder of The Savourists. We love you lots. Take care. Keep jiggling.